This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of August 16th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 147. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary. Headlines from the Pacific Rim and Pacific Northwest. The Big Deal feature, my audio notebook from the end of the British Columbia Legislature's unusual summer session. Despite the worsening coronavirus pandemic, could there be an election coming this fall? Plus, I'll award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those making a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or should the BC NDP change its initials to TBD, as in to be determined? Will schools really get underway just a few days after Labor Day, as many parents, students, and teachers are anxious about returning during the pandemic? TBD. What is the new budget and schedule for Site C, the BC Hydro mega dam that the NDP said it would cancel, but chose to continue after being elected? TBD. Will there be a fall election in 2020? TBD. Will British Columbia step back into a shutdown because of the rising numbers of youth infections of COVID-19? TBD. Speaking of that, Premier John Horgan took a page from the Donald Trump playbook last week. Remember Trump on the campaign trail in 2016?
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press. Let's see if that happens. That'll be next. Yes, sir.
Well, this is a clip of Horgan at his August 12th briefing as BC's coronavirus cases began to skyrocket because of infections among people under 40.
This is a call out to Deadpool right now. Ryan, we need your help up here. Get in touch with us. My number's on the internet. Seth Rogan, another outstanding British Columbian. We need to communicate with people who aren't hearing us. The two of you alone could help us in that regard.
Actor Ryan Reynolds did respond. Here's an excerpt of his tweet.
Premier Horgan, Ryan Reynolds here. I got your message about the thing. In young folks in BC, yeah, they're partying, which is, of course, dangerous. And they probably don't know that thousands of young people aren't just getting sick from coronavirus, that they're also dying from it, too.
So will the Van City Reynolds social media intervention work? Well, you know the answer. TBD. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Apple Daily, Chinese agents are tailing me in the UK, says exiled Hong Kong activist. That's what Wayne Chan told Canada-based YouTube channel Lay Day News, that he had been helping protesters who fled to the UK from Hong Kong. Chan founded the Hong Kong Independence Union in 2018 and left 3 weeks before the Beijing-imposed law in July of this year. Kyoto in the Japan Times, coronavirus spurs Japan to develop contactless garbage collection. The Environment Ministry plans to have garbage trucks with lifting apparatus, such as rear loaders, to pick up waste placed in large containers at collection points, similar to systems employed in other countries. Japan currently has waste collection points even in small alleyways, many of which could not accommodate large containers, but placing containers on larger roads would be inconvenient for residents, while smaller containers would mean less garbage collected at one time. Emma Ellsworthy in ABC News Australia, how 6 hours could have prevented the tragedy of the Ruby Princess. So what should have happened when the cruise liner docked at Sydney's overseas passenger terminal with 120 suspected cases of COVID-19 on board? An inquiry set out in detail the steps that could have prevented up to 663 COVID-19 cases across Australia. When the Ruby Princess set sail from Sydney on March 8th, there were 25 swabs on board, and when it docked on March 19th, 13 coronavirus swabs had been taken. But around 2,600 passengers were allowed to disembark as the samples were taken to a lab. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
Jayati Ramakrishnan in the Oregonian, USPS removes mailboxes in Portland and Eugene, cites declining mail volume. first-class mail volume has declined significantly in the U.S. during the pandemic. The U.S. Postal Service confirmed that four mailboxes were removed in Portland this week. Some mailboxes were removed and replaced with higher security boxes. This happens while President Donald Trump is resisting a move towards mail-in voting for the November presidential election. In the Bellingham Herald, Denver Pratt and David Rosbach report, Bellingham police officers used man with mental health issues for prank, records show. An internal affairs investigation into the incident, which occurred September 19, 2019, revealed there was no legitimate law enforcement purpose for contact with the victim, documents show. In fact, the victim did not request contact with an officer and had called 911 looking for the number to a cab company. Instead, officers drove him across town to an all-night restaurant in the back of a patrol vehicle and gave him $5 before sending him inside as a prank on the off-duty officers, the records show. Employees had to ask the victim to leave after he became disruptive, which prompted an unrelated customer to leave. The victim had almost 1,800 contacts with law enforcement from January 2019 to August 2020. Alexa Huffman in Czech News. Understanding how smoke over Vancouver Island was traced back to Siberia. Fires burning in eastern Siberia since late July and early August have generated smoke that has traveled to North America and has been reported in southern British Columbia in the first few days of the week of August 10th. The heat generated by the fires allows the smoke-filled air to rise quickly and is eventually carried downwind of the fires by winds aloft. The modeling suggests that the smoke traveled at heights varying between 2 and 8 kilometers aloft to reach Canada. Back in 2017, smoke from BC wildfires was detected as far away as Toronto. And these headlines this week in the Breaker.News. NDP sends mixed signals about Richmond Gym. Government wants accused money launderer's building after licensing Sun's security company. And subnational cooperation on China ambassador's agenda for chat with Vancouver mayor. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.news podcast.
This House stands adjourned until further notice.
My audio notebook from the end of the fifth session of the 41st Parliament of British Columbia. British Columbia's Legislative Assembly was interrupted in March by a three-month break due to the coronavirus emergency. MLAs reconvened for a hybrid session in late June with a handful of MLAs in the chamber and the rest in their offices or back home in their ridings, joining in by web conference. Four big screens were installed in the chamber. Premier John Horgan compared it to the Brady Bunch or the Hollywood Squares. Reporters were not allowed to attend news conferences in person, as per the press gallery rules. Phone in only. On August 12th, during Premier John Horgan's last news conference of the session, I asked him about the potential for an early election this fall. The NDP's mandate lasts until October 2021, but the party might roll the dice sooner in order to win a four-year majority mandate.
Hello, Premier. We're coming to the end of the legislative session, and there still is speculation of a fall election. And you've talked a lot about, quoting Dr. Henry, being kind and calm. Elections are not calm, and they often get nasty. And why would the NDP consider an election, early election this fall, when it's not really needed, and when it would put the NDP's interests perhaps ahead of the public's interests, above British Columbia's interests, especially at a time of pandemic?
Thanks for the question, Bob. What I have been focusing on every day is making sure that we're providing the services British Columbians need, whether it was within the pandemic or outside of the pandemic. We have a couple days left in the legislative session. The Minister of Finance is finishing up her budget. I begin my debate tomorrow for Thursday and Friday. And when that's concluded, we'll continue to work on the restart plan, the recovery plan that we've been working on all summer long, taking input from businesses, from not-for-profits, from communities, labor organizations, and individuals. A large consultation to make sure that now $2.5 billion that we have earmarked to put into transit, to put into ferries, to put into businesses and not-for-profits and community organizations is well deployed. That's my focus. Having said that, it's not a surprise to anyone, certainly not to you, that we are a minority government, and in that context, every day is potentially your last day. And quite frankly, that's been motivation for me over the past 3 years to focus on the things that matter to British Columbians. So I'm gonna stay on that track as long as I can.
Do you have a follow-up, Bob?
Yes, I do. Well, to use a sports analogy, an election would be more like what's going on in Major League Baseball right now than what's going on with the NHL bubble. It would require travel around the province. It would require gathering of people. And no matter how solid Dr. Henry's plan and advice might be to Elections BC, it would still put people in jeopardy. Wouldn't you want to talk to the other parties and come to an agreement that maybe now is not the time and maybe to stick to the original schedule, the end of the mandate next year?
Well, again, you also, if elections are cantankerous in any jurisdiction, spend 5 minutes in the BC legislature, Bob. I know you're in town. You'll see with your own eyes that it's not love and tranquility during question period. It's hostility and rash accusations and responses. That's politics. That I'll leave for another day. What I focus on as the leader of the government is the bells. What I focus on every day is trying to make sure that we're getting it right for British Columbians, whether it's on the start of the school year, whether it's making sure that our post-secondary institutions are providing the services that young adults and those who are retraining for the opportunities of the future are ready to go. That's my focus, without any doubt, and I'll keep focused on that.
Under the pandemic protocol, the press gallery was not allowing visiting reporters like me until the final week of the session. I was the only reporter physically in the gallery there for the final question period on August 13th. That's where BC Liberal critic Greg Kylo asked the NDP Energy Minister Bruce Ralston about BC Hydro's Site C megadam. When the NDP government decided to finish the project started by the BC Liberals, the budget was set at $10.7 billion and the deadline late 2024. But on the Friday before the BC Day weekend, Ralston dropped a bombshell. The budget and the completion date are both now to be determined.
When exactly, and details matter here, when exactly was the Energy Minister informed by BC Hydro that both the project construction schedule and cost were at significant risk?
Minister, Energy, Mines and Petroleum Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And it is useful to review the opposition's record when they were in government on Site C. They started the project without proper oversight and without a credible budget. They rushed through the approval of the design, which included significant geological risks. I'm sure they will remember the two tension cracks that occurred under their government, which led the BC Hydro to announce an increase in cost and construction time in November of 2017. Our government asked the BC Utilities Commission to review the project, and they found that it was already over budget and behind schedule. Let me quote from the 2017 BC Utilities Review. The BCUC is not persuaded that the Site C project will remain on schedule for a November 2024 in-service date.
In a budget estimates hearing on August 13th, BC Liberal finance critic Shirley Bond asked an easy yes or no question about the NDP's more than $6 billion in pandemic emergency spending, which will add to the province's debt. The answer from Finance Minister Carol James was rather open-ended.
So does the minister have any intention of raising additional taxes or creating new taxes or raising taxes?
We aren't focused on tax increases through this process. We're focused on economic recovery. That's where our focus is.
Also on August 13th, I sat down with David Eby, the Attorney General, to get an update on his letter of concern to the federal Attorney General, David Lametti. Late last year, news emerged about former Deputy Speaker Richard Lee being detained in China in 2015 and his phone being seized.
I found that incredibly concerning, and so we wrote to the my federal counterpart to express certainly our willingness to support whatever initiatives they had in mind, and if they needed any assistance within provincial jurisdiction, then we would do our best to provide it, and didn't get a response.
Does that disappoint you that something that, I mean, that's one MLA from one legislature, there's many legislatures, there's parliament, there's government employees who, I mean, there was a lot of travel before March this year, and that didn't look like it was going to end necessarily, even though with the diplomatic rift between Canada and China, that there's a lot of people at risk with information, at risk that China, which has been called an adversary by CSIS. Doesn't that concern you that Lametti would not take it seriously enough to communicate with you and say, yes, we're going to look into it?
Right. Well, my primary concern coming out of that was that it had been hidden from the public and from government for a period of multiple years, because I know that we had trade missions where, you know, it would have been good to know that there was a significant risk of MLAs at a minimum who had been critical of Chinese government policy to be detained and searched and have their devices searched and so on. That was certainly very worrying to me. I have to admit that I understand that something that happened multiple years ago is hard to pursue at the federal government level. Where I've been disappointed with the federal government response has really been around our repeated entreaties to them to improve policing related to money laundering, and the lack of a response on that, other than a commitment to work with us, has been quite frustrating. I would have assumed by now we would have had some better traction on that. And in fact, over the Christmas break, at the end of 2019, to lose the Integrated Financial Crimes unit in Ontario, it was 120 RCMP officers working on financial crimes across Canada, to have that disbanded. It seemed to me that we were going entirely in the wrong direction. So not only were we not making traction, but we were actually losing resources that were there. I expected and still do expect a response from Mr. Lametti. I don't pretend to know all the pieces that the federal government is working on, but I also know there are some pretty serious issues with China right now that they're working on as well, so which may also be distracting from Mr. Li's experience 5 years mm-hmm. ago.
Are you concerned about the foreign influence and interference that's happening here in other Five Eyes countries? But it is definitely happening here.
I'm always reluctant to stray into areas of federal jurisdiction, but I will definitely acknowledge that hearing the concerns of Hong Kong expats in Canada and in British Columbia, who believe that their ability to advocate on behalf of people in Hong Kong is compromised by their fears about how a foreign government may be reacting to that, is very troubling, and I hope that my federal colleagues are working on that aggressively.
On August 14th, BC Liberal leader Andrew Wilkinson quizzed Premier Horgan all day about the NDP's spending on housing the homeless, treating addiction, reopening schools, and helping the tourism industry recover. The session closed before 5:30 p.m. on August 14th with so much uncertainty in the air. Speaker Darrell Plekis is awaiting the results of RCMP investigations into the corruption that he and Chief of Staff Alan Mullen dug up. Disgraced ex-clerk Craig James and disgraced ex-sergeant-at-arms Gary Lenz could face criminal charges. Speaker Darrell Plekis:
It has been an extraordinary effort. Preparing for this ambitious undertaking required innovation, and hours of planning went into being ready for our first historic hybrid sitting on June 22nd. On behalf of all members, I extend my appreciation and thanks to all staff. We could not have done this without you. Government House Leader, just before you motion to adjourn, if I may say, I would certainly love to thank all of you for your extraordinary effort and cooperation in making what we've had to do over the last few months possible. I think it's something that every one of us should be very proud of. I think you all know that we really did lead the world in so many ways on this, and that's certainly all a great tribute to each and every one of you.
When your peace is gone, you won't stand alone. We'll all stand together, because this is our home. And it don't matter what color you are, because love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a person or group that is making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the Michael J. Fox Foundation, for carrying on with its Tour de Fox bike fundraisers. The physical rides in Port Coquitlam, British Columbia, Napa Valley, California, and Atlanta are not happening this year because of the pandemic, but there is a virtual ride on August 29th. You can join in anywhere in the world and help raise money to find a cure for Parkinson's disease. Go to tourdefox.michaeljfox.org for more information. And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to Bob at thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
We're all in this together. And we've got to brave the stormy weather. You can count on us. We're your neighbor. And we're all in this together.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of August 16th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on August 16th in 1896, Skookum Jim Mason, George Carmack, and Dawson Charlie found gold near the Klondike River in the Yukon? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to Bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.